part 7. So we're diving into the nectar of this wonderful explanation of Lord Kapila to Devahuti. We've covered 3 of the 8 verses specific to our seminar topic, Ashtakam, Sadhu Sangha Ashtakam. I'm going to review the 2nd and 3rd verse, which we discussed yesterday evening. The 1st verse, expressed very simply, is devotional service begins, and the attainment of perfection of devotional service is made possible through the association of devotees. And so the next 4 verses is how to recognize who is a sadhu, what characteristics, what qualities, what are the symptoms of a sadhu. Having that understanding, what the qualities by which a sadhu is decorated, one can recognize one and pay attention, cultivate relationship, and let that person, as it's described here, let that person become an object of your affection. So, for that reason, Kapila is describing the characteristics of a sadhu. As I mentioned yesterday evening, there's the verse. Oops, or over here. Tatikshiva Karunika, this very famous verse. Surada Sarva Dehinam Ajata Shatravak Shanta Sadhava Sadhu Bhushanam. These are symptoms. We discussed Tatasta Lakshana, behind the primary or Svarup Lakshana characteristic. Tolerant, merciful, friendly to all living entities, has no enemies, peaceful. Sounds like all of us, right? Peaceful, abides by the scriptures, and all of his characteristics are sublime. Such a sadhu engages in staunch devotional service to the Lord without deviation. Ananya bhavena, mayi ananya bhavena. For the sake of the Lord, mat krite, for the sake of the Lord, he renounces all other connections, such as family relationships and friendly acquaintances within the world. We discussed that can mean literally one takes sannyas. It can also mean that the material affection or affinity attachment portion is relinquished and the spiritual portion is the sole focus of their attention. So, qualities of a sadhu. Sadhu means, specifically, they're connected to the personality of Godhead. They're a devotee of the Lord. And despite so many disturbing, we may have some disturbing circumstances, but Prahlad Maharaj knew disturbing circumstances that we can't even imagine and remained completely tolerant. When presenting to others the message of Krishna consciousness, they may not be so eager to hear. Like Magari. Why have you come here? I was hunting and now all the animals have run away. Oh, great sage, why have you ruined my business? So, so many opposing elements, and this is Srila Prabhupada trying to print his Back to Godhead magazine and then later the Srimad Bhagavatam, and not having the resources, and the printer saying, how can I keep printing if you can't pay me? I can't keep doing this. Somehow Prabhupada managed. Sometimes even devotees are personally attacked with violence. I'm not sure what I'm going to speak about on Sunday evening, but I'm contemplating reading, explaining what our strategic planning work is from the GBC side. I may or may not do that. But in the readings that we've presented, Prabhupada is appreciating how the devotees, his disciples, are sacrificing. And he specifically refers to, sometimes my devotees are beaten. And just carrying out the message of Krishna consciousness, had that experience in the Chicago airport. We were distributing so many books, the workers were so envious. They come out at their lunch hour and just watch. And then one worker covered his head with his working jacket and went right up and punched, I think it was Pragosh, punched one of the devotees right in the face and flattened him right on the floor of the airport and ran. And just wiped away the blood and got up and continued distributing books. Or, anyway, I won't go into it too much. There's risk when approaching. I'll tell the story. Tamahar, any of you know, some of you know Tamahar Prabhu and his wife Mantrini. They were married before they came to Krishna consciousness, as far as I understand. And although they were householders, they did what everyone else did. They engaged in book distribution. And Tamahar was describing somewhere in the Washington area, Washington, Maryland, Virginia, that area. They were in a parking lot. His wife was over there. He was over here. And somebody came up with a gun. And give me all your money. So Tamahar, being a very gentle soul, gentlemanly person, he started reasoning with the person. You know, this is Krishna's money. I can't give you Krishna's money. Give me your money. And I forget all the details, but somehow something worked out. The guy with the gun's partner came along and said, hey, what are you doing? You know, anyway, something. It was risky. Anything could have happened. Of course, anything can happen at any time. Cross the street, get in your car and go home, and who knows what can happen. In this case, because he was preaching the message, he didn't like the message. He just wanted... Another one comes to mind. We were at a concert in Manhattan. In a period of time, they would have concerts in Central Park. So we would go there and have kirtan at the concert, and some devotees would distribute books. So there was one devotee, Satrajit. He was kind of a vata personality. Very, you know, he would float. He was that kind of a person. So we were going back to the temple by subway, and he got on the wrong platform. We were going downtown, and he was going uptown. And so then a train passed in between. And so we didn't see it happen, but he described later that he was wearing a pouch with some strings around his neck, and it had whatever little Lakshmi he had from the books that he had distributed. So somebody came up, a mugger came up and, you know, wanted to grab the bag around his neck. So he just screamed in Sringadev many times over and over again at the top of his. We couldn't hear because the train was moving. It was noisy. And the guy just laughed. He said, you're a crazy man, I'm getting out of here. Anyway, one can have difficulties not in devotional service, but in devotional service there can be difficulties like jagai and madhai, etc. So there's risk, but the devotee tolerates that inconvenience or danger because they're in the service to the Lord. And in this world there's duality. Sometimes it's very this and sometimes it's very that. And they tolerate. By nature, the devotee is tolerant. Devotee is merciful. They expand the message and extend it to so many others. Narada, very expert in giving that the message of Krishna to others, and Chaitanya Mahaprabhu out of this world, enlivening the forest animals of Jarikanda. Monkeys and the tigers look like they're having a great time, even the elephants chanting and dancing. Krishna! Not only a well-wisher of human society, but animal society as well. Devotee is not interested with his own liberation. Prahlad Maharaj didn't want just liberation for himself, but all of the unfortunate people. And Prabhupada would translate it as fools and rascals. So even he's seeing them in that light, he's feeling compassionate. Not, oh, they're fools and rascals, let them go to hell. He's interested in freeing them from that circumstance and always absorbed in contemplation how to bring the welfare of others. Their lives are dedicated, these verses are describing, with great inconvenience. Prabhupada writes in the purport, traveling all over the country, all over the world, door to door, bringing Krishna consciousness to others. And regardless of their background, birth, or upbringing, being friendly to everyone. And nice example, Prahlad with his classmates wanting to bring ultimate relief from the material entanglement. This is the life of a sadhu. So who can be a better friend than a sadhu? Sadhu has no enemies. Even others may give them difficulty. They don't consider them enemies. They don't treat them in that way. They remain peaceful. They abide by the scriptures. Prabhupada writes in his purport, one who actually follows the principles of scripture must be a devotee of the Lord, because all the shastras instruct us to obey the orders of the personality of Godhead. And all a sadhu's characteristics are sublime. That's text 21. Then 22, staunch devotional service. Question was being asked yesterday. Dhruva Maharaj, staunch devotional service. Renounced for the welfare of others, not just out of disgust or unhappiness, but for a higher purpose, that kind of renunciation, to serve the Supreme Lord. And Prabhupada describes, interesting sentence, a sannyasi is generally in the renounced order. What other kind of sannyasi is there besides in the renounced order? And that the sannyasi or the renunciate is one who may be, as we discussed yesterday, a grihastha, who is fully dedicating everything to the service of the Lord. And that the task or the standard of that renunciation is energy, resource, ability, capacity, everything fully employed in the service of the Lord. And Prabhupada quotes the verse, yasyasti bhaktir bhagavatya kinchana All the good qualities of the demigods become manifest within the body of a devotee. In contrast, the Hiranyakashipu-like non-devotees, even though they may also be very austere, and Hiranyakashipu was also very learned. Ravana was very learned. But no good qualities, no good characteristics because of this one thing. Opposed to the supremacy of the personality of God, if not, mean the opposite. So that's the review portion. And I think you're going to like the next verses. I'm looking forward to discussing them with you. But I'm going to begin with reading from the purport of Canto 3, Chapter 2, Text Number 6. The topic is Sadhu Sangha, and the specific part of Sadhu Sangha is, well, what's the consequence? How do you associate with a sadhu, and what's the consequence of association with a sadhu? You can do that. That's okay. That's okay. The scene, the storyline is Vidura. I mentioned this the other day. Vidura has met Uddhava. And it happens to be the very same day that Krishna left the planet. And Krishna has just finished speaking Uddhava Gita. And he's then informed Uddhava he's going to leave. And he leaves. End of Krishna's pastimes. So Uddhava smashed. His life and soul is gone. Where does that leave you? Your life and soul is gone. And Vidura comes. And he says, Uddhavaji, wow, here in the forest, look at this. Just seeing you reminds me of Krishna. Tell me, how is Krishna? How is Balaram? And then the whole list of everybody in Dwarka. Ugrasena and Devaki and on, describing and giving the names. Here's the previous verse. Or previous two verses. Uddhava, Uddhava served the Lord continually from childhood, and in his old age, that attitude of service never slackened. As soon as he was asked about the message of the Lord, he at once remembered all about him. For a moment, he remained dead silent, and his body did not move. He became absorbed in the nectar of remembering the Lord's lotus feet in devotional ecstasy, and he appeared to be going increasingly deeper into that ecstasy. Prabhupada explains, he was with Krishna. He was in Goloka. His body was here, but he was with Krishna in Goloka Vrindavan, just by that intense absorption of thought. It was so observed by Vidura that Uddhava had all the transcendental bodily changes due to total ecstasy. And he was trying to wipe away tears of separation from his eyes. Thus, Vidura could understand that Uddhava had completely assimilated extensive love of God. He was with Krishna by that remembrance of Krishna, although his body was separated from Krishna. Then, text 6, the great devotee, Uddhava, soon came back from the abode of the Lord to the human plane and, wiping his eyes, he awakened his reminiscence of the past and spoke to Vidura in a pleasing mood. I'm going to read the purport. It's very beautiful. So you're going to have to listen very carefully to something very beautiful. Purport. When Uddhava was fully absorbed in the transcendental ecstasy of love of God, he actually forgot all about the external world. The pure devotee lives constantly in the abode of the Supreme Lord, even in the present body which apparently belongs to this world. The pure devotee is not exactly on the bodily plane, since he is absorbed in the transcendental thought of the Supreme. When Uddhava wanted to speak to Vidura, he came down from the abode of the Lord, Dwarka, to the material plane of human beings. Even though a pure devotee is present on this mortal planet, he is here in relation to the Lord for engagement in transcendental loving service and not for any material cause. A living entity can live either on the material plane or on the transcendental, in the transcendental abode of the Lord, in accordance with his existential condition. Then, the conditional changes of the living entity are explained in the Chaitanya Charitamrita in the instructions given to Rupa Goswami by Lord Sri Chaitanya. So now this is describing Sadhu Sangha. Quote, I don't know if this is the exact how Prabhupada has translated it, but it's Prabhupada's presentation of Lord Chaitanya's explanation to Rupa Goswami of Sadhu Sangha. How does devotional service begin? And how does it? How do you associate? And what is the outcome? Listen carefully. It's very beautiful. The living entities all over the universes are enjoying the effects of the respective fruitive results of their own work, life after life. Out of all of them, some may be influenced by the association of pure devotees and thus get the chance to execute devotional service by attainment of taste. This taste is the seed of devotional service. You know the verse, Brahmanda Brahmite Kona Bhagyavan Jeev Guru Krishna Prasadivai Bhakti Lata Bija, the seed of bhakti. Have you ever wondered, as I have, what's that seed? Because on the one hand, it said not only the seed, but love of God is in the heart of every living entity. And love of God comes from the seed. I mean, the tree, the fruit of the tree comes from the seed. So it's already there, and then through the mercy of Guru and Krishna, one gets the seed, but it's already there. That's a pondering that I've... So how does... It's important, not just minutia. It's how does the process begin? And here Prabhupada is revealing. And Kapila Dev is going to say in a similar way what it is. So, this taste is the seed of devotional service. And one who is fortunate enough to have received such a seed is advised to sow it in the core of his heart. As one cultivates a seed by pouring water to fructify it, the seed of devotional service, sown in the heart of the devotee, may be cultured by pouring water in the form of hearing and chanting of the holy name and pastimes of the Lord. The creeper of devotional service, so nourished, gradually grows, and the devotee, acting as a gardener, goes on pouring water of constant hearing and chanting. The creeper of devotional service gradually grows so high that it passes through the entire material universe and enters into the spiritual sky, growing still higher and higher until it reaches the planet Goloka Vrindavan. The devotee-gardener is in touch with the abode of the Lord, and even from the material plane, by dint of performing devotional service to the Lord simply by hearing and chanting. As a creeper, takes shelter of another stronger tree, similarly, the creeper of devotional service, nourished by the devotee, takes shelter of the lotus feet of the Lord and thus becomes fixed. Beautiful, poetic imagery, how Sadhu Sangha works. When the creeper is fixed, then the fruit of the creeper comes into existence, and the gardener who nourished it is able to enjoy this fruit of love, and his life becomes successful. Unquote. That Uddhava attained this stage is evident from his dealings. He could simultaneously reach the supreme planet and still appear in this world. That's sadhu, regardless of ashram. Uddhava was a grihastha. But his full dedication was to the personality of Godhead, and so by his association with Vidura, who already had attraction for Krishna, he was the sadhu giving association to another, and it was through that sadhu sangha that the existing creeper of Vidura grew and grew and grew and grew and grew. And the nectar, the water that was poured, that was coming down, was the Krishna Katha that was coming from Uddhava, from the mouth of Uddhava. The mouth of Uddhava was first from his heart. And that was... So, I'll just read this one sentence again. Out of all the fruitive workers, some may be influenced by the association of pure devotees and thus get the chance to execute devotional service by attainment of taste. That taste is the seed of devotional service. So, the topic is sadhu sangha. The sadhu is like the tree. The lotus feet of the Lord are also in that translation we just read. The lotus feet of the Lord are also like a tree. As a creeper grows by attaching itself to something, a tree, so the sadhu is that tree. And the sadhu is also giving the water to nourish the creeper. But through contact with one who is in contact with the lotus feet of the Lord, one can grow to the lotus feet of the Lord. The direction is guaranteed because the tree is attached to that the lotus feet of the Lord. The sadhu is attached to the lotus feet of the Lord. And the creeper of one's own bhakti will grow accordingly. And then attached to the lotus feet of the Lord. The sadhu is gesturing to the lotus feet of the Lord, like that beautiful painting of Rupa and Sanatana Goswami, simply absorbed in thought, immersed. Not just thought like we might have a passing thought. They would envision the pastimes of the Lord in their heart as they would chant. Sarasakhi, it's called. By a jubilant heart, they would see Krishna, Radha and Krishna would enact pastimes. And they would describe those pastimes in their writings. It's out of this world. And such association one can get through the messages of the sadhu and therefore the writings of Rupa Goswami. Prabhupada, with all of his mission of wanting to complete Srimad Bhagavatam, he did a time out and translated two of Rupa Goswami's books, Nectar of Instruction and Nectar of Devotion. So important. So here's the verse, the Sanskrit of 23, Madashraya Kata Mrishta Shrinvanti Katayanti Cha Tapanti Vividhas Tapa Naitan Madgata Chaitasa. Engage constantly in chanting and hearing about me, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. The sadhus do not suffer from material miseries. Remember Devahuti's description of this terrible suffering and this dense darkness of ignorance. So he's now describing that one who is in this position, the sadhu who is in this position, doesn't experience that, and one who associates with properly with sadhu can go beyond that miserable existence. Prabhupada explains, a sadhu is not disturbed by such miserable conditions because sadhus have bodies and minds. Bodies and minds get pain and trouble. But a sadhu is not disturbed by such miserable conditions because his mind is always filled with Krishna consciousness. And thus he does not like to talk about anything but the activities of the Lord. Maharaj Ambarish did not speak of anything but the pastimes of the Lord. Vachangsi Vaikuntha Gunanavarnane. He engaged his words only in glorification of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Again, the sadhus are interested always in hearing about the activities of the Lord or his devotees. Since they are filled with Krishna consciousness, they are forgetful of the material miseries. I don't even feel the pain in my knee today. That's why I'm sitting in a chair instead of the other seat. But when absorbed in Krishna Katha, it's absent. It's like on days when we may fast. Just absorb yourself in devotional service. You don't even notice it. You engage in hearing and chanting, and it's just fine. Just continue the hearing and chanting. Just fine. At other times we're absorbed, like we have our japa retreats, and we're trying to increase our hearing and chanting. So it's something that's just routine. I'll eat something and then go back to hearing and chanting, back to chanting japa. But it's just to maintain the body and not, oh, that's my happiness, the tongue. It's, of course, honoring Krishna prasadam is devotional service also. But specifically, the activity of glorifying and hearing. That's the Bhagavat Marg, primarily, Shravanam Kirtanam, Vishnu Smaranam. And then from that, all the other forms of service. And Prabhupada says it very beautifully, these two contrasting positions. Ordinary conditioned souls, being forgetful of the activities of the Lord, are always full of anxieties and material tribulations. On the other hand, since the devotees always engage in the topics of the Lord, they are forgetful of the miseries of material existence. So if someone says, "Oh, I've got this misery," and the devotee says, "Well, just chant, Prabhu." They're like, "Oh, you're no help. I'm going to go where someone's going to give me some help." We may make some suggestions for some practical solutions, but the root is forgetfulness of Krishna. Because we have a bad bargain. When I think of bad bargain, I think of Prabhupada's advice, don't buy a used car, because you're just buying somebody's problem. They get rid of their car because it's a problem, and then you go buy it. You're buying their problem. So it's a bad bargain. This body, this material existence. We thought it was going to be happiness. We got punched in the face. Now we got a body, and we're stuck with it. It's a bad bargain. So make the best use of a bad bargain. Use it in service to Krishna till it's finished. Use it in service to Krishna, in devotion to Krishna. And along with that, the bad bargain program, there's miseries. So you tolerate the miseries. You do the good part of the bad bargain. What are you going to do if you got a pain in your knee or you got a something or a something? Somebody said, somebody did, something happened. What are you going to do? The material world, you tolerate it and move on. But move on to what? Move on to something that's sadhu guided, and it's going to take you to a spiritual happiness, and that absorption in that spiritual happiness, this other just becomes inconsequential. The firefly in the daytime, it's inconsequential. What light? It's inconsequential. The happiness or misery? The real misery is that we forgot Krishna. And we continue to go down the path of forgetting Him. Even we're somehow, to some degree, trying to be a devotee. We continue going on forgetting Him. That's misery. Our real happiness is separated from us. So I want to go down the path a little bit further, or maybe in a little different way. That nice description given to Rupa Goswami by Lord Chaitanya from Chaitanya Charitamrita, describing the creeper of bhakti. Going back a bit, just address the question, why is the association of devotees so valuable? First, a devotee, who is a devotee or who is a sadhu, they have unflinching mood of service in all circumstances, meaning it's not circumstantial generated and circumstantial crushed. It's transcendental in all circumstances, unflinching, humble service to Krishna. And because of that mood, Krishna manifests Himself in their heart. He's attracted to that. And Krishna remains in their heart. And that means He's ever present in their consciousness. And when the devotee speaks, the devotee opens their heart. Because just like Uddhava, how is Krishna? Just hearing Krishna's name, his mind became intensely absorbed in all the wonderful things of Krishna that Krishna meant to his heart. And he was there. He wasn't here, he was there. But he wanted to serve, because that's his mood. So he wanted to serve Vidura. Vidura's come. Krishna somehow sent him, so he wanted to do some service. So he spoke. He spoke his heart. Through sound vibration, consciousness is transferred or transmitted. That's the broadcaster device. Like whatever the technology is for however they broadcast sounds, your little cell phones. It's a little broadcaster inside, and then there's a station, and it can, you know, bounces it here and there, and then you got a receiver on the other end. So the other person has to have the receiver on. Otherwise, the signal won't be transmitted. But the potential of that association is Krishna. And the love for Krishna, the Krishna consciousness of the sadhu, is transmitted by sound. It's not just the details, do this, don't do that, something like that, a behavioral direction. It's consciousness is transferred. And then in that receiving of that sound vibration, what at least gets a glimpse of Krishna. And that even a glimpse of Krishna is so powerful, so attractive, so meaningful, so filled with light. Darkness is dispelled. How many times have you heard the devotees that have had association with Prabhupada describe that when they were in Prabhupada's association, something they grope for words for how to describe, something magical happened. They felt that Prabhupada could just see inside their heart and knew everything about them, even they didn't say anything. You've heard those things? And all of a sudden, whatever anxiety, something, it just went away. You've heard those things. Listen to those Prabhupada memories or participated in such gatherings, and it's like that. Just a moment. Just they feel, you know, their all their lives' contamination just washed away. Somehow it comes back again. But it's gone. And what is that experience when the glimpse of Krishna is received through sound vibration? That's this taste that Prabhupada is speaking about. It's something altogether different. It's otherworldly. I don't know what it is exactly, but that's it. At least the seed. Something that encourages us to go on in devotional service. In nectar devotion, Prabhupada writes about it. It's bhakti abhas. It's not exactly the same as this bhakti lata bij, but at the beginning there may be some experience that's just euphoric. Whatever that might have been in each one of your lives as devotees, a kirtan or some exchange, something. Krishna gives a little glimpse of a reflection of him. It's not even him. And it's so exhilarating. Keeps you going. But it's just a reflection of the real thing. But it's so powerful, the reflection of the real thing. And our chanting is like that until it's Shuddha Nam. It's Namabhas. It's a reflection of the holy name. And how powerful is the reflection of the holy name? I mean, it's retaining our Krishna consciousness and sustaining our Krishna consciousness. How valuable it is. How powerful it is. And in the association of sadhu, one who has this quality that's being described by Kapila Dev, Krishna is there in their heart. Like Uddhava. And it's not Yamshama Sundaram Achintya Guna Surupam. It's not the four-armed form. It's Shamasundar. In their heart. So, the principle of sadhu sangha, it's association that transfers from the heart of the sadhu to our heart. If we're attending to that association properly. If our receiver is on, not off. The technology is not missing on the other side. It's something on our side. Another nice poetic image that's sometimes given in relation to the heart of a devotee is the heart of a devotee is like a crystal. And the nature of a crystal is it takes on the color of that which it is surrounding. A chameleon is a very inferior form. It also takes on the color of whatever it's around. But a crystal shines radiantly. So the heart of a devotee shines like that association. So if there's a desire in the heart of the aspiring devotee to know their relationship with Krishna, to be connected with their relationship with Krishna, or even it's just dormant through sadhu sangha, because that's in their heart, it awakens. Something happens. The covering is diminished and the awakened state of attraction for Krishna just by association. Just by being proximate to. But then the verse that we're going to read now, text 24, it's more than that. Not just hang out with, but seek the association. Serve those personalities. Become attached to those persons. Attached to the persons in a mood of service. Not in a needy way, but in a mood of service. And the primary service is hearing. That sounds like fun. What service is that? It's service. Because what does the sadhu want? We just heard from the previous verse. Suradak sarvadehi nam. He wants to see that all the living entities that are unnecessarily suffering in this world, karunika, they're freed from that condition. And the method is by hearing. So please, hear. That's service. It's enlivening to the heart of the sadhu to see persons are hearing very carefully. Because they know what that means. The coverings are being removed. The consciousness of Krishna, their attraction for Krishna, their attachment for Krishna is growing. Their suffering is being mitigated. It's like a doctor. He's got his little medicine bag, and why is he carrying his medicine bag? He wants to cure illnesses. And when people become cured from illnesses, that's his service. He's happy. So a sadhu is happy in a similar way. Take the medicine, hearing. Take it through the ear, fine. Take it through the ear. That's how you take it. And then the magic happens. So Kapila Dev's teaching in this text 24 is not just seek the association of, but it's stronger. Become attached to. And then the earlier discussions about the function of mind and the function of heart here become even more important. That the mind become attached to Krishna. And so Machitta. Let the mind become attached. From text 23, Naitan Madgata Chetasa. Madgata, that same phrase, Madgata Chetasa, their thoughts are filled with me or my pastimes and activities. It's one of the Chaturshloki verses of Bhagavad Gita. Same phrase. Madchita, Madgatak Prana, Bodhayantak Parasparam. So what do they do? That's what's internal. And then Katayantas Chamam Nityam Tushanti Charamanticha. And Krishna is very pleased and the sadhu is very pleased because they're doing like that. So it's a characteristic of the sadhu. Their mind and consciousness and heart are absorbed in Krishna, and you associate with them, and that becomes, you become attached to that association through hearing, and then, of course, applying. Then the material disease is gone. So here's text 24. Ta ete is referring to the sadhus, those very sadhava sadhavi, those very sadhus, my dear sadhavi. Sarva sangha vivarjita, sangas teshu atate prartya sangha dosha hara hite. Sangha dosha, hara. Hara is takes away, as in hari, one who takes away. Krishna takes away all their miseries. The pernicious effects of material attachment. Sangha dosha. Dosha. Kaler dosha nidhe rajan. Hyasti eka mahan gunan. Kirtana deva krishna. So dosha means not something that you eat. That's another spelled differently. This is miseries. Who wants to associate with miseries? Everyone that's in trying to be an enjoyer of material nature, their intention isn't let me associate with miseries. But that's the bad bargain. You buy miseries, expecting happiness. It's a trick. It's false advertising. Take it to the Better Business Bureau. They're promising happiness, and you get misery. File a lawsuit against Prakriti. And you'll suffer another suffering. It's not how, but that's how it works, and you can't get released just by complaining about it. I wanted happiness, and I got punched in the face. Hey, that's the design of the place. Didn't you read the label? Caution, you're going to get punched in the face. Oh, I'll take 5 of those. And then you go and do it again. Like a donkey. Not you. I mean, the conditioned soul. It's the nature of the place. By design. Dukkhalayam ashashvatam. Krishna designed it that way. It's infallible. Every time. It may be a little delayed. There may be some sensation that says, oh, it feels good. The nature of the place. We're not meant to be here. We're not meant to be in the consciousness of being the enjoyer of Prakriti. It's not our nature. Not who we are. It's a place of suffering. By design. The infallible Lord. It's to help us understand we don't belong here. So it's impetus to not just get out, but restore our proper consciousness, address ourselves to the circumstance that we're in proper consciousness. And the message of the sadhu is that, cut this affinity for material existence and take to spiritual existence. And the potency to do so is within that sound vibration. So here's the translation. Oh, my mother, oh, virtuous lady. These are the qualities of great devotees who are freed from all attachment. You must seek attachment to such holy men, for this counteracts the pernicious effects of material attachment. This is the answer to Kunti's initial question. He's not dodging the question. He's giving direct answer. The whole purport is so nice, and so I'm going to, in pieces, read it. Kapila Muni herein advises his mother, Devahuti, that if she wants to be freed from material attachment, she should increase her attachment for the sadhus, or devotees who are completely freed from material attachment. The math is real simple. In Bhagavad Gita, 15th chapter, verse 5, it is stated, who is qualified to enter the kingdom of Godhead? It is said there, Nirmana Moha Jita Sangha Dosha. There it is again. Sangha Dosha. Nirmana Moha Jita Sangha Dosha. This refers to one who is completely freed from the puffed up condition of material possessiveness. A person may be materially very rich, opulent, and respectable, but if he at all wants to transfer himself to the spiritual kingdom, back home, back to Godhead, then he has to be freed from the puffed up condition of material possessiveness, because that is a false position. Prabhupada's got the gloves off. He's swinging. Material attachment brings misery. You want happiness? Let go of that sense of I'm successful, or I'm not yet successful, but I'll get there because I'm good, I'm smart, I really apply myself, I can do it. Then there's the other, the ignorance. Oh, I can't do it. Missed the boat altogether. Altogether. The message of a sadhu is it's another paradigm, and you can't just like keep working with the same paradigm to get to the spiritual position. Doesn't work. You won't get there. You have to hear from the sadhu and take that other position. Necessary. The word moha is used here. Not in the verse, it's in Nirmana Moha Jitta Sangha Dosha. The word moha is used here to mean the false understanding that one is very rich or poor. In this material world, the conception that one is very rich or poor, or any such consciousness in connection with material existence, is false, because this body itself is false or temporary. A pure soul who is prepared to be freed from the material entanglement must, first of all, be freed from the association of the three modes of nature. Here it is again, something, you know, ABC, Krishna consciousness, Bhagavad Gita, detachment from the modes of nature. What's the problem? I'm a nice devotee. What's wrong with the modes of nature? We have to rise above the modes of nature. That's Krishna's second chapter instruction. Trigunya Vishaya Veda Nishtrigunya Bhavarjuna. And that's the Veda. The Vedas deal mainly with the three modes of material nature. Rise above them, O Arjuna. Be transcendental to all of them. Second chapter, Bhagavad Gita. our consciousness at the present moment is polluted because of association with the three modes of nature. Therefore, in Bhagavad Gita, the same principle is stated. It is advised, jitta, sangha, dosha. One should be freed from the contamination, the contaminated association of the three modes of nature. Well, where's that? Where is there not something contaminated? I challenge you. I remember it was in Europe, they had this thing for about a year. Every class they would speak about it. You can't find anything pure in this world. And every class was, you can't find anything pure in this world. So, what do you do? We're in this world. How do you, whatever it is, something pure, medicine or food. You know, the food has so many toxins in the food before you even cook it, because they use so many pesticides and on in the air and water. And how do you find something pure in this contaminated world? You can't. What do you do? Bring your consciousness to that which is supremely pure, Krishna. That's the... And how do you do that? Sadhu Sangha is the beginning stage, and it awakens from within your heart and so forth. Here also in the Srimad Bhagavatam, this is confirmed, a pure devotee who is preparing to transfer himself to the spiritual kingdom is also freed from the association of the three modes of material nature. We have to seek the association of such devotees. And then he puts it all on you guys. And me too. For this reason, we have begun the International Society for Krishna Consciousness. You, Prabhus, are the sadhus for the people of the world. These, you know, if not, what's the hope? So become for the benefit of others. Just by being in the world and being a sadhu, it'll be of benefit to others. And how does that happen? Take these instructions to heart. Down a little bit, last paragraph. Because a devotee is freed from all contaminated material association, he is not affected by the miseries of material existence that was previously stated by Kapila. Even though he appears to be in the material world, he's not affected by the miseries of the material world. How is this possible? And then Prabhupada gives the example of a cat. Cat has jaws. And in the jaws of the cat can be a mouse. Or in the jaws of the cat can be their little kitten. I had this experience when I was growing up. We had a female cat. And regularly she had litters of kittens. And I don't know if you've seen it, but I found it very interesting when I first saw it. The mother goes to little kitten, and the little soft skin in the back of their neck, puts her mouth around the soft skin in the back of the neck and picks the kitten up and moves the kitten from point A to point B. And the kitten's there, you know, arms dangling and tail dangling, but just comfortable, because it's in the jaws of the mother. Not afraid. And then she goes to the other kitten and brings them all from point A to point B, and now they're over there. I don't know what the deal was, why they had to go to point B, but she was doing that. Some reason. Some higher faculty she had of why A to B. But the same jaws with the cat, with the mouse or the rat. Oh. Death. Fearful. Similarly, those who are sadhava, the devotees engaged in Krishna consciousness in the transcendental loving service of the Lord, do not feel the contamination of material miseries. We're the kitten. And material nature is the cat that plays with the rat and eats it. But the kitten, very carefully, moves. Whereas those who are not devotees in Krishna consciousness actually feel the miseries of material existence. Isn't that a mystery? It's a nice mystery. Give it to Sherlock Holmes and let him figure it out. How does it work this way and that way? It's a big mystery. But the mystery is presented. It's yayatam mam prapadyante tang sataiva vajamyaham. The living entity, as they regard Krishna, he reciprocates. So be a kitten. Be in the association of a sadhu. Conclusion of the paragraph, purport. One should, therefore, give up the association of materialistic persons and seek the association of persons engaged in Krishna consciousness, and by such association he will benefit in spiritual advancement. By their words and instructions, he will be able to cut off his attachment to material existence. So, this is not a new idea. The sadhu cuts. Heard Prabhupada say that over and over. Sadhu means one who cuts. But what's the instrument that the sadhu uses to cut? They don't get out a sword and cut. It's their words. And the words doesn't have to be harsh. And that's cutting. That's what cutting means. Rather, the message of the Bhagavatam uses the same language or imagery, poetic imagery, that the message Chindanti Kovidas Tasya Konat Kona Kuryat Kataratim. And what is it that they cut? Karma Granti, the bondage of attachment to fruitive activity and the results of fruitive activity. Yad Anudya Asina Yukta Karma Granti Nabantana. Karma granti nabantana. Prabhupada has translated that as the knot of the internet. The bondage of the soul to their doing fruitive activity to get something and the consequence of having done that. The bondage that comes back. The bondage of karma. Karma granti nabantana. And Anudya, it's remembrance of Krishna. That's the asina, that's the sword. Remembrance of Krishna is the sword. That's the stage of perfection of Prahlad Maharaj was constant remembrance. Krishna smarana or Vishnu smarana. Shravanam kirtanam Vishnu smaranam. Prahlad's perfection. He was protected from so many difficulties just from constant remembrance of the Supreme Lord. Vishwanath Chakravarti, just the last Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur's commentary is that the fault of material association is destroyed by sadhu sangha. Properly received. That is to say that we don't just give material energy a bad name and, you know, thumb our nose at it. We engage it in Krishna service properly because it's for Krishna service. That's what it's for. But the contaminating influence is removed by sadhu sangha and the instructions, faithfully adhering to the instructions. Becoming attached to the instructions that we receive, living according to the instructions we received, carrying those instructions in our heart, receiving that glimpse of Krishna through those words and the inspiration to go forward. That's the description that we're finding here by Kapila Dev, the fruit of sadhu sangha. Very nice. Very nice. Let's see if there's any discussion. Okay. Looks like there's no questions. There's one question. There's a few questions.
Hare Krishna Maharaj, I have two, three questions. One question, today when we studied the text 21, where the last one is all the characteristics of the sadhu are sublime. Now these characteristics are sublime or other characteristics are sublime?
Those and all of them. Those okay. Mentioned, etc.
Etc. So why are these characteristics sublime
why
then?
Not?
Sublime means like not
just nice, but very nice. That's what sublime means.
Okay. I thought sublime means kind of underlined or
no,
something.
No.
Okay.
Sublime means? Oh, that's what sublime means.
Okay. And the second one, when you said, Maharaj, that the devotee is like a creeper. So now the sadhu or the guru and the devotee or a disciple relationship is eternal because the creeper is totally dependent on...
Yes. Yes. Yes.
And the...
To understand that is not easy, but the answer is yes. It's eternal because it's in relation to Krishna.
Right.
And that which is in relation to Krishna is eternal. The form may not be like this or like that, but the relationship is eternal. The form is the essence. Excuse me, the relationship is the essence. Mm. And yes.
So that means the devotee cannot get the mercy of Krishna directly like that?
That's a second understanding. It's correct. But it's implied, yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
And the third thing, when we said that the seed, like we already have a dormant love of Krishna in our heart,
that's
and
right.
Then we are saying...
It's mysterious. So I covered it.
Right.
Do you want me to say something more about it?
What I was thinking, maybe that the seed is already there because seed itself is dormant.
In the one sense, yes. What you just said is what I always thought. And I don't see any reason to say it's not already there in seed form because it's there, but it's dormant. So that means seed form.
Okay.
So the doubt comes because Lord Chaitanya taught the seed is given or comes from both the mercy of Guru and Krishna. One receives the seed. So the resolution of that is presented in that purport. And that other sense, that sense of what Lord Chaitanya is describing, how he's using that term seed, it means taste. And taste, one can say, is the awakening of the seed of love of God. There's some taste. It may be just very little. Just a glimpse. It's awakened. It's the beginning, the germination of the seed. Through that mercy received. That's another way of using the term bija, or seed. The seed of the matured stage is awakened. Taste.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think I can do better than that, so don't ask it again.
Thank you, Maharaj.
Okay. Behind you.
Hare Krishna Maharaj, thank you so much for a wonderful lecture which is really touching the heart. Maharaj, we have read that sadhus has all the good qualities like demigods. Sadhus has all the qualities, sadhus develop all the qualities which has the demigods. But Maharaj, demigods do have some attachment, right? So I believe strongly that sadhus has more.
Definitely. That doesn't mean that they're more than, doesn't mean they don't have good qualities like the whatever the good qualities the demigods have, and more.
So sadhus are more powerful,
more
than the demigods.
Yes. But the demigods have good qualities. Don't poo-poo the demigods. The sadhus are better than you are. We don't do that.
But sadhus are more pure. They're the pure devotees of Lord as demigods.
You're right. Third time. Yes. But please be cautious. And don't... Those who are very elevated, such as the demigods, we don't look down upon them. They're exalted personalities. They have good qualities. They have some faults too, but they have some good qualities. And we honor that. We honor them. They have devotion for Vishnu. Mixed, but they have devotion for, and we honor that. As much as we honor other Vaishnavas that have devotion for Vishnu or Krishna. They may have their, so we honor that. They have good qualities. Okay?
Okay.
Yes, from our objective point of view. Fourth time. And the sadhus are, we regard with even greater esteem. Because these presentations by Kapila Dev.
Thank you so much, Maharaj.
Someone else?
I have a general question, Maharaj. In compared to our all dashavatars like Varavatar and Kashyapavatar, why the Narsingadev has given more importance and we have deities everywhere?
He's very merciful. He's particularly merciful. People like... By association also. Here's an ardent Nrisinga Bhakta. And then they associate with someone. Oh, Nrisinga Bhakti. And so forth. By association. It expands. He's very... It's not a competition. And that, you know, from the hierarchy of forms of the Lord. Okay. Up here.
Guru Maharaj, I know the answer, but I want a little clarification on this. This Karunika, the Titistika, Karunika. So sadhu is very merciful. Apparently, why do they get angry time to time?
I know that can be merciful. Depends on whether the person is actually a sadhu or not, but they may exhibit out of their mercy. I can give one example from my direct experience where I experienced Prabhupada showing anger, and it was for instruction. Explicitly for instruction. It was so transparently clear. It was a very, very happy, jolly, euphoric exchange with the devotees. Devotees were bringing paintings from the artists. The whole year long they're working on paintings. Their life was invested in creating artwork for Prabhupada. And they brought their paintings, and one by one Prabhupada would critique and say something, and it was very joyful, very, very light and happy, very sublime. Right in the middle of that, Prabhupada, because I was sitting in the front, I watched, his finger went to the buzzer on his table, which meant he was calling the servant. And the servant came in, paying his obeisances, right in the middle of paying his obeisances, Prabhupada's voice came like thunder. I don't know what he said because I just blanked out. And he said something. And then the servant paid his obeisances and left. And then Prabhupada was back in the same mood of joyful, jolly, happy, and like whiplash. And I came to understand later that servant was having a problem. And I came to find out even later than that specifically what the problem was. And Prabhupada was using that. You know, the relationship was such that he could do that. He couldn't do that with just, didn't do that with just anybody. It was a very intimate relationship, and he used in an appropriate way. And my realization, or the impression that I had at the time, was it was like he had a sword in a sheath and he pulled it out and he put it back. He wasn't controlled by that mood. He was using it for service, for the benefit of his disciple. He wasn't controlled by anger. He was using something in his transcendental way of how to use things for the benefit of his disciple. So that's also mercy, when delivered in the right, by the right person, in the right way, at the right time, and guided by Krishna.
Thank you.
Okay.
Maharaj, there is a question online.
Okay.
The question is, even if a sadhu does the most abominable action, they still need to be seen as a sadhu. I find it very difficult to digest. Are there any practical tips?
Sure. Lord Brahma stole the calves and the cowherd boys. Krishna corrected. Lord Indra sent torrents of rain. Krishna corrected. He curbed the pride of Indra, and Indra became very humbled. So now how are we supposed to regard Indra? We should regard Indra as Krishna regards Indra. I explained this the other day. There's deliberate and there's circumstantial fall down. And if the circumstantial is in rare, radically extreme circumstances, one has a problem. And as soon as that circumstance is removed, they become again situated properly. It's just, then we are to regard that person as sadhu. It's not regularly or with some repetition they do some abominable thing. But if there's this overwhelming circumstance and they become covered, they do something, it's Krishna's words. We may not have the vision that Krishna has, but Krishna, we take Krishna's vision and say, Bhajate mam ananya bhak, Bhajate mam ananya bhak, Bhajate mam ananya bhak. And then here comes this Sudurachar, and Bhajate mam ananya bhak. That person is considered ananya bhak, ananya bhakta. That's how to view it. Sadureva samantavya. That's Krishna's opinion. So, what should I do? Listen to my mind or take Krishna's opinion? Not a difficult choice, although I like my mind. And usually I'm right. If not always. But Krishna's opinion is better than my mind.